You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. For some, summer is their favorite season. The kids are out of school, adventure's the focus, but for others, such as me, juggling it can be tough. It can lead to overwhelm and counting down the minutes and days till those kids are back at school and the cooler weather arrives. Others may be worrying they're wasting their days of sunshine. Now, I'm not one of those people. For me, hot weather and me do not mix. Now, personally, I have a therapist myself, so I can speak openly and honestly about how sometimes those seemingly irrelevant conversations with my therapist can go on to better my life. Because therapy can help you understand your own needs better. It can make you feel more confident, set boundaries, create a version of summer that actually feels good for you, whatever summer looks like for you. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform. It's served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com. What would you do if, whilst clearing out a loved one's home, you found evidence they'd been hiding something from you for decades? How would you react if grief led you back to a familiar house, only for that house to feel suddenly unfamiliar? What do you do when a parent's belongings suggest they knew far more than they ever told you? How would you explain finding something hidden that seemed ordinary but felt wrong the moment you touched it? And what would you do if the home you thought you knew best began to reveal a secret that had been waiting long before you arrived? As always, today we don't guarantee you any answers, but we do guarantee a good look in this penultimate edition of The Dark Paranormal. Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal with Kevin Eustace. Hello everyone, and welcome indeed to episode 9 of season 24, our penultimate episode of this season. This season, for me, as I've said numerous times, has seemed to gone by in the blink of an eye. And as always, we leave our most intriguing, our most thought-provoking, and our most terrifying tales towards the end. Next week's finale is one, believe me, you will not want to miss. If you haven't already hit subscribe, I'd suggest you do so now, as you'll want to be amongst the first people to hear what I can only call one of the most profound finales we've possibly ever had. As we reach our break in play after next week, I of course would say now is the right time to join our Patreon, where you can gain extra access to different shows each and every week, even during the downtime. But more on that at the end. And also, please remember we're always accepting submissions. I don't care if it's a paragraph, a sentence, or 13 pages. Again, the link to submit is in the show notes. Or you can go direct to thedarkparanormal.com and click on Submit My Experience. But right now, let's jump immediately into this penultimate episode. As I ask you, for the second to last time this season, to please
lower the lights, make yourself comfortable, and, of course, leave your disbelief at the door as we listen to Disbeliever. Dear Kev, I want to start by saying I've been listening to the show for maybe 2 years now, and I've gone back and forth on whether to send this in maybe a dozen times. Every time I sit to write down everything that went on, I end up closing the laptop, finding something else to do. It's not that I don't want to tell it. It's more that writing it down makes it feel like I'm admitting something I've spent 3 years trying to unpick. Yet, here I am. So, I'll at the very least try to do it some justice. My name is Claire. I'm 38. I live in Derbyshire in the UK. I work as a pharmacy technician. And personally, I'm not someone who seeks this stuff out. I don't watch horror films. I've never been on a ghost hunt. And before any of this happened, I would have described myself as firmly agnostic on the whole subject. A disbeliever, someone who'd never had any reason to think about it either way. 3 years ago, my mum died. She'd been ill for around 18 months, breast cancer, diagnosed too late. And by the time they did find it, it had already moved. We had time to prepare, which people always say is a blessing. And I do understand what they mean by that, but I'm not entirely sure it's the complete blessing people believe. 18 months of watching someone you love become less themselves is its own particular kind of damage. And I don't believe the slowness of it protects you in any way that everyone implies. She died in February, at home, which is what she wanted. I was there, my brother wasn't. He lives in Australia and couldn't make it back in time, which he still carries guilt for, wrongfully in my opinion. It was just me and the district nurse when she left. It was quiet, peaceful. None of that made it any easier, though. I want to be upfront about my mental state in the months that followed, because I think it's important. Yes, I was grieving, but I was functioning. I went back to work after 2 weeks. I was sleeping, I was eating. I was sad in the way that people are sad when you lose a parent. I mention this because I know the first thing people reach for when you tell them something like this is grief, the mind doing what distressed minds do. And I'm in no way discounting that. I've turned it over too. But I know myself. I know my difference between the fog of bereavement and what I'm about to describe. And believe me, they are not the same thing. Maybe 6 weeks after the funeral, I drove down to her house to start clearing it out. She'd lived there for 31 years, a semi-detached in a village just outside Matlock. She'd bought it with my dad, who left when I was 7. So really, it had been her house for most of my life. Obviously, it was full of her things. Her smell. The specific way she'd organise her kitchen cupboards, leave shoes in a line by the back door, as if she'd still be stepping into them any moment. I'd been back once since the funeral to collect some paperwork. But this was the first time I was there properly, alone, with the intention of going through things. I'd given myself the weekend. I packed a bag, planning to stay Friday and Saturday night, sleep in the spare room rather than her room. I wasn't ready for her room. Friday went fine. I got through the kitchen and the living room. I filled bin bag after bin bag. I kept things I probably didn't need to keep. And yes, I cried a reasonable amount of time, but I felt okay about it. Evening time, I ordered a takeaway, watched things on my laptop. I was asleep by 10. Saturday was when it all began. I was in the spare room going through the wardrobe. Old coats, handbags, the accumulated clutter that migrates to spare rooms over decades. On the shelf above the hanging grail, tucked behind a stack of folded blankets, was a cardboard box I'd never seen before. Plain, no writing anywhere on it. The brown parcel tape sealing it had dried out, not really adhering anything to it anymore. I brought it down, wiped off the dust and opened it. Inside there were only two things. The first, a bundle of letters, maybe 35 or 40 of them, tied together with garden twine. The paper had yellowed at the edges. The handwriting on the top envelope wasn't my mum's. I didn't recognise it either. The second thing was a photograph. It was laying face down. I noticed that. The face down position. And for some reason, something in me paused on that. It was only a small thing, but it felt deliberate in a way I couldn't rationalise. I turned it over. A child. A girl. Maybe 4 or 5 years old. Dark hair, pale face, serious expression. She was stood in what looked like a back garden, squinting slightly into a bright sun. The dress and shoes were old-fashioned in a way I literally can't date. I wouldn't say Victorian or anything dramatic, just a particular frumpiness of clothes from a few decades ago. She was looking directly at the camera. That was the thing I kept coming back to. Children almost never look at cameras cleanly. They perform, they look away, they grin, or they cry. Or they at least do something with their hands. But this girl was doing none of that. She was simply looking. Her expression not blank exactly. It was something I kept trying to find a name for and couldn't. Not shy, not hostile. The word that kept presenting itself, which I kept dismissing, because it seemed absurd, applied to a child of that age, was deliberate. I had no idea who she was. I brought my attention back to the letters. It was the same handwriting across them all addressed to my mum at this address. I checked the postmarks on a few. The most recent was August 87, the earliest November 83. 35 years in a box at the back of a wardrobe. My initial instinct was to not read them. It felt intrusive. They felt private in a way that even the intimacy of going through a dead parent's belongings doesn't usually feel. But I did open the most recent one. It was from a woman. She signed it with just a first name, which I won't share here out of respect for whoever she is. She wrote with the familiarity of someone who had known my mum well. The letter itself was short. It said she was writing because something had happened. That the girl, whoever the girl was, had been seen again. That she'd not been alone this time. And that, and I quote, whatever arrangement my mum had made about it clearly hadn't been sufficient, and it needed to be revisited. There was no explanation of who this girl was, no explanation of what seen again meant or were. No history that I could use to build any context. I read maybe half of the letters over the next 2 hours. They were all variations of the same conversations. References to sightings. To something the two women had apparently agreed on years earlier. To whether the house was still safe. To the girl. And whatever she was accompanied by. My mum's side of the correspondence wasn't there. I was reading one half of a dialogue that could have been going on for nearly 4 years. The language I could understand perfectly, but couldn't interpret it at all. And I kept coming back to that photograph. I'd propped it against the wall next to the box, and every few moments I'd find my eyes going back to it. The more I looked at it, the more unease that had first settled on me when I opened the box refused to shift. There was nothing wrong with the photograph or what it showed. A child in a garden in the sun, that's all. But something about the directness of that look, the completeness of it, the way it didn't vary, the way it gave nothing back. Well, it made me want to stop looking before I'd worked out why. Subconsciously realizing I would be interested in this, I moved it to the center of the kitchen table. And I carried on going through the wardrobe after that. Not really concentrating. I kept finding myself pausing, hands on whatever I was folding, thinking about those letters. The phrase that kept resurfacing was, whatever arrangement my mum had made. Because that implied intention. That implied my mum had assessed something. She decided on a course of action and implemented it. My mum was a practical woman. A retired practice manager. Precise. Organized. She did not do things vaguely. If she'd made an arrangement, she had made it deliberately. And she'd kept it going for at least 4 years, according to these letters. And then she'd placed that correspondence in a box at the back of a wardrobe and not told any of her children a single word about any of it in 3 decades. Around 5 o'clock, the light outside started leaving. The house faces north and the back garden gets dark early in February. And I noticed that what had been an ordinary afternoon of going through boxes had become something rather different as the light dropped. Of course, it's the same rooms, the same furniture. But something about the quality of the house in the early dark felt altered. Altered in a way I couldn't attribute to anything specific. Too quiet, maybe? Or a different kind of quiet? I found myself doing what I hadn't done at all during the day, which was looking over my shoulder, listening at doorways before heading into rooms. At one point, I went into the kitchen to put the kettle on, and I stopped in the doorway. The photograph had moved. I'd placed it on the kitchen table. It had been in the center. It was now at the edge nearest the door, nearest me. Still face down, but in a very different position. I stood there for longer than I should have before I went to touch it. Then I moved it back to the center, not picking it up, but shoving it across the counter. I told myself I'd moved it without noticing. The way you put something down while your mind is elsewhere, and you can't account for the precise position afterwards. That's completely plausible. I know that's completely possible. But I also know I spent the rest of the evening with the photograph in my eyeline as much as possible. Which is not my usual behaviour. Nor the behaviour of someone who fully believes their own explanation.
You've got that idea, you've got that product, you've got that thought, you've got that app, you've got that podcast, you've got whatever. I've been there with the podcast. And you think to yourself, will this work? Is this the right decision? Do I have the time? Take the jump. That's my personal advice. Because starting something new isn't just hard, it's terrifying. So much work goes into this thing that you're not entirely sure will work out. It can be so hard to take that leap of faith. Trust me, I know. For me, it was, what if no one listens? What if I make a fool of myself? And nearly 8 years in, I'm now the director of my own company because of podcasting, because of making that leap of faith. Now, whatever your business idea is, it always helps to have a partner like Shopify on your side to help. Get started with your own design studio with hundreds of ready-to-use templates. Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand style. Get that word out like you've got a marketing team behind you. Easily create email and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. But what if I get stuck, you may say? Well, Shopify's always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. It's time to turn those what-ifs into... with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/darkparanormal. Go to shopify.com/darkparanormal. That's shopify.com/darkparanormal. Money goals are things we all have. My personal one is to make sure that I'm mortgage free by age 50. How am I getting towards that goal? I'm 46, and in 4 years, do I think I'm going to get there? Well, I'm unfoundedly optimistic. But here's the most interesting thing. We only like to talk about money when we've made it, when that goal is achieved. Now, you've probably got our well-being app. Well, Acorns is a financial wellness app that wants to show a little love to everyone who's on their way to a goal. Some people shy away from the word investing because it seems like it's a word for people who know about finance, etc. Believe me, that's not a prerequisite. Acorns is a smart way to give your money a chance to grow. Acorns is easy. You can sign up in minutes and start automatically investing your money, even if you've just got spare change. Acorns supports your big and small goals across every life stage. Plus, the app has the Acorns Potential screen, which shows you the power of compounding and how your money could grow over time. Acorns is an all-in-one. No more finance apps cluttering up your phone. With Acorns, you can invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place. Believe me, I've never seen something like the Acorns Potential screen showing the power of compounding. And even that word, compounding, we all believe that belongs to the ones who work in Wall Street. It doesn't. It's yours as much as theirs. So sign up now and Acorns will boost your new account with a £5 bonus investment. Join the over 14 million all-time customers who already have saved and invested over $27 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to get started.
Paid on client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 2 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age, and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investing involves risk. Acorn Advisors LLC and SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
So summer has well and truly arrived, at least here in the UK. We're in the midst of a heat wave. I don't like the heat for one simple reason. I cannot dress for the heat. I don't wear shorts. I always wear jeans, or usually. However, since my last advert for Quince, where I mentioned that my friend in America has been sending me things from Quince that I order through them, and I found the quality to be outstanding, I decided to take another look back at Quince to see what they had on offer. And let me just say, my summer wardrobe is looking altogether different this year. Like I say, I don't do shorts, so Quince's European linen pants were perfect. They arrived the other day, and we're in the midst of a heatwave, as I mentioned, and they are perfect. Given I'm a summer jeans wearer, these have never made my legs feel more cool in any summer on record. Not just that, but because Quince focus on quality essentials that feel and look amazing, they are well-made basics, but without that luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They also work ethically with ethical factories and cut out middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. It's genuinely the kind of brand you end up recommending to everyone for everything. Well, most people will. I'll talk about my linen pants because I can wear them at a barbecue in the afternoon, going straight through to evening drinks. Quince's linen pants have changed the way I'm going to dress this summer. So elevate your wardrobe this summer. Go to quince.com/darkparanormal for free shopping on your order and get 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/darkparanormal for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/darkparanormal.
That evening, I cooked. I rang my brother and I told him about the box. He'd also never heard of the woman who signed the letters. He had no memory of any friend of Mum's that might fit. He suggested it was probably something from before we were born, and that we'd never get to the bottom of. And that was almost certainly right. I agreed with him. I went back to the letters, made sure they were back more or less how I'd found them, and I set the photograph on top, face down, for reasons I didn't examine, and I left the whole thing back. back on the kitchen table. I went to bed around 10:30, checked all the doors, turned out all the lights. I left the spare room light on and the door slightly ajar, as I always do if I'm sleeping somewhere unfamiliar. I like to be able to see at least something, to hear the house. I woke at 2:10, not gradually, instantly, the way a noise pulls you up, except I couldn't identify a noise. I lay still and I listened to the house. Nothing. I checked my phone for the time, and as I did, I noticed the spare room door, which, as I say, I'd left ajar, now fully closed. I initially felt no fear, more curiosity. I got up, used the bathroom, checked the landing. Again, nothing. I told myself the door had been swung on a draft and I went back to bed. But beforehand, I opened it and left it ajar again. At 3:40, I woke again. Same sensation. Immediate. Complete. A switch being thrown. I lay there with the light off for longer this time. And this time, the thing I noticed was the silence. I know that sounds odd, but silence is not uniform. A house at night when you're alone has its own specific quality. The hum of a fridge, the occasional flex of the building, the soft buffer of the outside world coming through the walls. What I was lying in didn't have that quality. It was a closer silence. A silence that felt like the room had shrunk, like the air had been moved aside, to accommodate something that was now in the room with me. I turned on the bedside lamp. At the foot of the bed, facing away from me, was a child. She was small, the right size for 4 or 5 years of age, dark hair, the dress. I won't try to describe the physical experience of that moment because I don't think I would have the vocabulary to do so. I know my mind went immediately to every rational possibility and exhausted them all in about 2 seconds. I know I made a sound. I know I pulled back against the headboard. I know my hands were shaking before I was conscious of being frightened. She didn't move. She stood at the foot of the bed with her back to me, completely still. I said something. I think it may have been hello. My voice didn't sound like my voice. She didn't react. I kept the light on and I watched her. I counted in my head, I think, because I needed something to do with my brain. 5 seconds, 10, 30, a full minute. She was not the stillness of a sleeping child or a child frozen with surprise. And she was not breathing in any way I could see. This stillness was total. The way a photograph is still. The way something is still that doesn't require movement because movement is not part of what it is. And that was the thing that undid me. That specific thing. The thing I've never told anyone is that I became acutely, terribly aware that I did not want her to turn around. And I don't know where that awareness came from. I hadn't thought it. It arrived fully formed. Like a certainty that had been waiting for me to be in this exact situation before it was needed. Whatever was going on to be on that front, whatever was going to be on the front of that, I knew I did not want to see it. I understood that with a completeness that had nothing to do with logic and everything to do with some older, more primal part of me that keeps me alive, that has kept people and humans alive long since our rational minds came along. I slowly slid out of bed on the far side, keeping my eyes on her at all times, keeping my face to her back. I backed myself out into the hallway and I turned on every light I could reach without taking my eyes off the bedroom door. Then I backed myself downstairs, sitting on the sofa with the kitchen light and the hall light and the living room light and every light on. I had every door open so I could have as many clear lines of sight as possible. And I sat there until it was fully daylight. I didn't sleep a wink. When I built up the courage to go back upstairs at maybe 7:30, the spare room was empty. And I checked everywhere. My mother's room, the bathroom, the airing cupboard, behind every door. Nothing. I went back into the spare room to collect my overnight bag. I didn't go to the foot of the bed. I stuck to the far side, reaching past the end of it to grab my bag. And I left without looking at the space where she'd been stood. I don't know if that was sensible or cowardly, but I think a mix of both. I checked all the rooms again on the way out, not the methodical check of a few hours earlier. This was a quick lights-on, lights-off sweep that was really just about making sure no door was closed that I hadn't closed myself. Everything was as I'd left it. I locked that front door and I sat in the car on the drive for 30 minutes, just trying to make any rational sense, before I eventually started the engine. From the outside, the house looked entirely normal. Same as it had always looked. Same as it had looked every time I'd come home to it as a child. Driving back, thinking about my mum living in that house alone for 30 years after my dad left, sleeping in that house every night, and thinking about that box in the wardrobe, I thought about the fact she had never, not once, given me or my brother any indication there was ever anything wrong with that house. I don't know what that means. Whether it means there was nothing ever wrong with the house and whatever I experienced was contained to that one weekend. Triggered somehow by opening that box, by looking at that photograph. Or whether it means my mum had spent over 30 years managing something and not telling us. As I drove home, I patted the box on my passenger seat. Why I took it with me, I honestly cannot tell you, but I did. But here's the part I haven't told my brother, because I told him the broad shape of what happened, but I stopped before this. When I arrived back home, I placed the box on my kitchen table. I got myself ready, or should I say unready. This was now time for me to try and relax, get in my pajamas, and try to make some sort of logical sense of what I'd experienced. When I felt ready, I sat at my kitchen table and I pulled the box towards me, deciding I would take a second look at this photograph to see if the dress that this little girl was wearing was the dress that had its back to me over the weekend. So I lifted the lid. The photograph wasn't there. I went through that box methodically. Every letter. The box itself. The twine. I went through my bag, my coats. I checked my car front to back. It was not in the house, not in the car, not in the box. The last time I touched that photograph was when I'd placed it back in the box and placed it on the kitchen table the previous evening in my mother's home, face down, before I went to bed. I have 3 questions that I come back to and just can't answer. The first being what was in those letters, what my mum and this woman saw, what the arrangement was they made, and whether it has anything to do with the house or something else entirely. The second, clearly, is who this girl was. Not what she was, who. Because whoever had put that photograph in that box had kept it there for a reason. And my mum had kept that box for 30 plus years. None of this happens by accident. My third question is the one I find hardest to sit with. If what was stood at the foot of my bed was the thing in the photograph, and I'm not saying it was, I'm saying I don't know, then it knew I had seen the photograph. It knew I had looked at its face, although it stood with its back to me. Inside me, even with my logical, rational point of view on the world, something in me, internally, believes I was given a choice. I don't know if it means the photograph was a kind of warning about exactly this, and my mum had left it face down for the exact same reason that I ended up putting it face down. I don't know what my mum knew, or what she may have been protecting me and my brother from, or whether the fact she's gone now means that protection is gone too. The house itself sold 4 months ago. I don't know who lives there. I've thought about trying to reach them, but every time I try to talk myself into it, I talk myself out of it, because I don't know what I would say or what good it would do. If anyone listening has had an experience involving something in a parent's home they clearly kept deliberately hidden, something that suggested they'd been managing something for years without telling anyone, I would really love to know I'm not the only one. And if anyone knows what it means when something won't show you its face, I'd love to know that too. Thank you, Kev. I know this is rather long. But one final point. My brother sent me a message 2 weeks ago. He said, and I quote, "You won't believe me, but I've just got on the bus at night and there was one other person on it. I only noticed her when I raised my head. She had long black hair and I thought she was far too young to be travelling on a bus at this time of night. I couldn't see her face, she was looking straight ahead. I looked down at my phone to read a text, looked back up, and she was gone. The bus hadn't stopped in between me looking at her and my phone. Work that one out, sis. Lol." Far from lolling, I was in utter shock, even though I responded with a laughing emoji. If it does or does not make the show, at least I'm glad someone of an open mind has had the chance to read my experience. Claire. Well, Claire, thank you so, so much for this amazing experience. I absolutely love this experience in its entirety, and I will explain why. You'll note there was one sound effect throughout this entire episode, that being the sound of a light switch, simply because this episode does not need any other jump effects, scare effects, etc. It's very akin, and it's rare for a long-length episode, to the shorter experiences that we cover on Dark Bites. Now, our Patreons will tell you, I really enjoy doing Dark Bites episodes because the stories are short and therefore give you as the listener, or me as the reader, much more jump-off points about theories to why what we've just read or heard may or may not have took place. This, to me, is the closest elongated version to a short Dark Bite. But the most interesting part about that is none of it is filler. Each and every part of this is relevant to the experience. And even now, as I finish up this now 30-plus minute episode, I feel like I've only been talking for 5 minutes, which is the sign of a great experience. But the jump-off points we can look from at this episode are as terrifying as they are numerous. Firstly, from what you've wrote, it does appear to be, without jumping too many guns, that your mother was connected with something some sort of organization or at least a one-on-one agreement, apparently to keep a spirit trapped, or should I say at least distanced from whoever the letter writer was. Now, the lack of letters when they stop in the late 80s would imply your mother done something which made the writer of the letters be at peace, whatever that was. And I do think, although I would not have thought of this had you not said it, your theory could well be right about whatever protection your mother placed around this girl died with your mother. And the addendum at the end, where you receive your brother's text message, was the final chill down the spine. That's what convinced me this is going as our penultimate episode. Because it shows one wonderful, terrifying thing. The right experience does not need bells and whistles. The right experience lives in your head. You encounter it as you hear it. And you may, as I did initially, step back and think, is that actually scary? And then I read it again, but made sure to visualize as I was reading. And genuinely, if you absorb that experience in the way you're meant to, by visualizing what you're hearing, nobody can walk away from that experience and say that they would not be absolutely terrified or left unaffected. So, Claire, thank you so much for this amazing experience. And please, touch wood it doesn't take place, but should there be any follow-up, please do let us know first and foremost. But once again, thank you. And thank you to each and every one of you who've joined me on today's penultimate episode. I truly cannot wait to tear into this episode in our After Dark Patreon show. And on the subject of, as promised at the start, a quick mention of our wonderful team at Patreon, who are the reason you're hearing this for free right now. When you sign up to our Patreon, whose link's in the show notes, you can join at the first tier to get ad-free episodes, and who likes adverts? Tier 2 gets early access and ad-free episodes, meaning early access to finales and debuts. And also Tier 3 gets all of the below, as well as an hour additional content for Patreons only each and every week, even on the downtime between seasons, which is about to come up. Yes, 52 weeks of the year, our Patreons at our goal level receive two additional shows every week. Dark Bite, where we take a look at the shorter experiences sent in, and also After Dark, where I do things like take a look at the episode we've just covered. And now, with the break coming up, it's the perfect time to claim your free week trial of Patreon at the highest tier, so you can binge for at least a week that back catalogue of over 200 plus hours of Dark Bite episodes. So to claim that free week, you just simply go to the show notes, or you can go to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. And of course, if you can't financially support the show, do not worry. Your ears are the only thing I require. But if you'd be so kind as to subscribe to the show, which is free and takes a few seconds, or leave a nice review, or maybe tell a friend. Because the show works like a snowball. You tell a friend, they listen. They may have a story, they send it in, I relay that story back, somebody else may tell a friend, and we end up, like I've said earlier, doing something I never thought at the time of starting this podcast, creating an archive of the current generation's darkest paranormal experiences. So if you can join the world's greatest paranormal community in my eyes, sincerely, then Patreon is for you. And if you're unable to, you can still help a show that you listen to get better, and for free. But I want to thank each and every one of you for joining me on this wonderful penultimate episode. And believe me, hit subscribe, be amongst the first to hear next week's finale, as I say, a finale the likes of which I doubt we will see again or have heard the likes of before. But for now, I will say goodbye and ask of you just one thing. and that's to remember, when you discuss the paranormal, always try to leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll speak to you next time for the finale of The Dark Paranormal Season 24. Stay safe and goodbye.